Welcome into another episode of Football 52. This is episode number 27, well beyond the halfway point. Well, at least beyond the halfway point. We're getting closer and closer to the season. It is August 7th. As always, I sit down with the head football coach of the UNC Bears, Ed Lamb. And we're full on into fall mode, ready to rock and roll, getting ready. Practices rolling last week, coach. So you've had a few days now to see these guys in action. It's been nice and warm out there for you guys. Guys are breaking a sweat for sure. First impressions, you feeling pretty good about the team after about, what, a week of practice so far?
Every day tells a new story. There's no question about that. My impressions one day change and alter a little bit the next day, and I think it's because of the natural progression of players having setbacks and breakthroughs and being challenged by their teammates and coaches and their own aspirations, and the way that the depth chart changes every day. We purposely mix things up quite a bit with the depth chart and different chemistries of guys on the field. Like the offensive line is one that I think a lot of people can get their mind around. Your five best players, I think that's, you know, day one. And then you start to look at how two guys are playing together adjacent to each other. And so some change-ups can occur. And now the sixth or seventh guy is coming in. And what's the chemistry like with that? And we do that with really the whole team. It's just sometimes more obvious on the offensive line because everybody knows that phrase of gelling and playing together and when does your O-line gel, things like that. But, yeah, you know, just simply stated, first impression is this is a team that's humble and has something to prove, and I don't want to lose that. And so a lot of my cultural preaching has been exactly about that concept.
It's interesting, too, to hear you kind of talk about gelling and what that looks like, because I think I even think, you know, when I played like high school football, every day, as you said, was different. You go out there and it's like, all right, we're going to try this guy with this group today. And instantly, it's easy for the starters at that point to go, oh, I'm not starting anymore. But that just kind of preaches more to that point of if you find the right combination. We talked about the offensive line weeks ago. When one guy leaves, sometimes that can get stronger, not necessarily an indictment on that person, but maybe these guys just work better together. There's a lot of truth to that. So when you're kind of mixing and matching, trying different combinations, I mean, as you follow football more and more, it makes perfect sense because you want to see different looks from different guys. Maybe a certain dude is just better with a left tackle's better with a certain left guard to his right.
I think anyone that understands, pays attention or has played football, they understand that there's a lot of communication, especially with the offensive line, amongst the offensive linemen to each other, and then the defensive backs. And that's one of the things that as coaches, even though we know and we're actually teaching the communication that should be happening, oftentimes when we're making those initial depth charts early in the season, we're not even thinking about that as one of the strong attributes, is how well does this player identify and then communicate adjustments or calls or combinations, and that especially at the safety and interior offensive line positions, that is so critical. And so it's, you know, again, it's one of those things where maybe early on in camp there's a real star in that area. Well, we're hoping not only to give that guy a greater opportunity, but will his example bring up the play of the guys around him in that way? Will they be more vocal? Will they be more assertive? Will they be more correct?
Coach, we're going to spend some time talking about some of the offensive standouts too. But this is another one of my favorite things about this show is I can go directly to the source. So I'm out at practice on Thursday afternoon, I believe, and I snapped a couple of pictures. Listen, I'm not going to win an award for photography or anything, but my thing is I like to snap a few pictures to say I'm out there, to see that I'm out there, because I want the guys to know we're following this Bears team. But it gives people kind of a quick glimpse. You know, sometimes when you just see it, rather than talk about it all day, it's real to some of these guys. So I snapped a picture of Peter Castelli out there, and all I tweeted was something like, hey, I wonder who's going to be quarterback number one. This is off of our conversations. I was not saying that Castelli is going to be quarter number one. Had a comment on there that said, I think coach has been pretty adamant all offseason that Castelli is number one. And I'm thinking back to our conversations, and you and I have talked about Castelli, and we've talked a lot about Hank Gibbs. So let me just can we set the record? It's still a battle right now, right? We don't have a number one quarterback named.
I think so much of the confusion that exists is my fault, because it's really about how I understand the context of a question. Because even if we had a really solid 1, 2, and 3, and even if there was a wide gap between 1 and 2. If your question to me is it still a battle? Yes, it's a battle every day. If number one doesn't show up one day, we are not saying, well, you know, come on back tomorrow and jump in the starting spot. Like, every player is in a battle every day. But, you know, I also want to be, like, as clear as I can right now. We in no way have named a starting quarterback right now. There's not a reason to do that. We don't feel that that's important to the team right now. There definitely is a 1 and a 2, and then a gap right now that exists between 3 and 4. And I can talk more about that, but gosh, people read into things. So if I say, hey, Peter Castelli and Hank Gibbs are 1 and 2, that sounds to a lot of people like Peter Castelli's 1 and Hank Gibbs is 2. So I'm going to start saying, well, okay, it's Peter Gibbs and Hank Castelli. Those are – and then somebody can say, well, he said Peter first. I guess to just put a little bit more detail to it, Peter had a really dynamic spring but dealt with an injury. Hank was our number 2 last year, and that means a lot. Hank has played in games and done good things, produced. He was very productive as a quarterback last year and had limited opportunities because just when he was about to get his shot, almost simultaneously when Jacob Sermon went down for the last 3.5 games of the season, Hank went down as well with an unfortunate timed injury. But from just an attribute standpoint, Peter, really dynamic. Arms and legs, with his arm and his legs, can move the ball horizontally, vertically, with both his arm and his legs. Hank is really a vertical threat in the passing game and in the running game. Like, he is 6'6", 240, one of the strongest players on our team. And when he decides to go right through the heart of the defense, it is a challenge to your manhood as a defender. Mm. Are you going to step in front of that and stop his momentum, or are you just, you're going to kind of side tackle him and just bring him down and let him – because he's 6'6".
Yeah.
So if you're just kind of doing a side tackle, he can lay down for 2.5 more yards. And that's really where I think that both of those guys are bringing something dynamic. At this point, I can say, we're not trying to hide anything. They're both going to play, and they're both going to play a lot. And it's up to them – in the end, who's getting a few more snaps, or who's getting the token, first snap under center when we get to game one.
Well, that was one of the things I was going to ask you too, Coach. And again, anytime I ask you a question, especially as we're getting closer to games, if you want to just say, well, I'm not going to answer that, that's totally cool. Yeah. Because we know as this podcast gets bigger and bigger, teams might start using this as a little bit of a scout too. We joked about that a couple of weeks ago, but it's a real thing. When you say both guys might play a lot or will play a lot, is that in the season? Could we see different combinations, different situations where it's going to be Hank Gibbs in this situation and it's going to be Castelli in this situation? Or are you of the mindset, I want whoever wins this job, that's going to be the guy. Maybe there's one or two off plays that another guy will roll in. How do you view that, and are you prepared to answer that one today?
I think, for sure, because Justin Walterscheid, the offensive coordinator, and I have been together for a long time. And the most important thing for us is not necessarily, who's one and who's two today here in our the seventh day of training camp or whatever it is. We want clearly defined roles for the guys as we get into game week. And I can't tell you what that clearly defined role is yet, right? It might be there's a clear one and a clear two, and two's not coming in unless one is struggling or gets an injury or something like that. It could also be certain areas of the field. It could be just an automatic changeup where we say, look, we want to have our two ready if anything happens to one. So we're going to – on the second or third or fourth series of the game, you're going to see the number two. But right now, we feel like we've got two really good, capable leaders at that quarterback position who are bringing something different than we had last year. I've said it many times. This is you know, I don't protect everything. So, you know, if Incarnate Word is listening to this podcast, I'm giving it away. Like we had a pocket passer who couldn't move out of the pocket. It wasn't part of his game last year in Jacob Sermon. I thought he had an elite arm, and I thought we struggled to protect him, and I thought we struggled to get open. I think we're better in all of those areas, and we have more ability to move the quarterback outside of the pocket, both designed and scrambled. So I think that's something that I'm willing to talk about with those two guys. I'm not trying to hide that. I think we're going to be different in that way.
Well, good. I just wanted to clear the air because I was scratching my head out there when I got the comment. Like, it's Peter Castelli, hands down. It's like, I mean, maybe he is a front runner at this stage, but like you said, we haven't named the guy necessarily just yet. So we've got several days left until we get to Incarnate Word, to that game. So there's a lot of decisions to be made. The quarterback position obviously is pretty key. It's a big one. But we're also going to talk about some of the other offensive standouts. But back to the quarterback side, one more thing. You know, you talk about gelling and getting the guys to work together and how those combinations can work. You mentioned it with a guy like Jacob Sermon, an elite arm. That guy, maybe with a different system, who knows what happens with a different offensive line. But sometimes if that line's not ready, I go back to even the Broncos years ago with Tim Tebow. I mean, with Tim Tebow, they had to reconstruct their offensive line midseason because he's going to run 80% of the time. Way different than Kyle Orton, who's going to be just a pocket passer. So it does, you know, sometimes when you have that line that has a really good understanding of what their quarterback's going to do back there, it can make a world of difference.
And it has made a world of difference for Hank, because with Peter now in the mix and Peter and Hank together and their skill sets being a little more similar, you know, we're able to move the offense. Like, we haven't changed the offense. It's the same playbook.
Sure.
And you're going to see a lot of the same plays, but just the way that those plays are run and the options within them would change. But, you know, Hank last year was in serving a backup role to Serm. We were mostly forcing Hank to practice as a pocket passer. And any addition that he made to the offense with his feet would have been a scramble mode or an occasional keep that Serm may not have decided to keep in those situations. And now with Peter, those two guys are much more their sweet spot of the playbook is much more in alignment, and I think that's helping our offensive line and our receivers who really are able to kind of narrow our emphasis within the playbook as well.
Well, and again, I can only take so much from watching a little bit of practice. I was out there for just a little bit last week. But yeah, you see Castelli move, and I mean, there's something about it. He does have that electric ability maybe to be able to make some big plays with his legs. So if he's the guy, if that's the guy, that will be exciting. But then on the flip side of that, you look at Hank Gibbs. I know he was a Wyoming guy. And you start going, well, could you have those situations where he's just plowing over defenders? Like you said, good luck trying to tackle that guy when he's ready to go. Could get a little flash of Josh Allen type stuff happening there. So both sides could be extremely excited. So I'm going to be pumped. Whoever this guy is, I think either one's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
High level confidence from our coaching staff and I think our whole team right now in both of those guys. And I want to be clear, it is a back and forth right now throughout training camp, and that I don't mean that to say that a guy is having a bad day. What I'm saying is there's a guy that steps up and has an exceptional day, and it hasn't just been Hank and it hasn't just been Peter. They are both raising the level of each other's play and in turn raising the level of our offensive play.
Isn't that what you want, though? I mean, every day a guy – it's not that a guy is losing a job or losing ground. It's maybe another one's coming up and he's gaining a little bit more ground. He's stepping it up a little bit more. Then the next day that encourages this dude to step up. That's got to be the perfect scenario in a situation like this.
It is perfect, and then you know, it may become the perfect scenario that one of the guys elevates at a more consistent level, and we would not be like we're not. I haven't decided that we're going to go into game one without a named starter. If it's really becoming clear to the coaching staff and their teammates, it's our job to make sure that we name that starter and show confidence in that guy, and you know, be damned whether Incarnate Word or some other opponent knows who's going to play. We know who Incarnate Word's quarterback's going to be, barring injury, is the the favorite to win the Walter Payton Award this year. We know exactly who we're facing, and they're not shying away from that. And if we were in that situation, and we may very well be at the end of today or the end of next week or the end of next month, I don't know. But when we are, we won't shy away from announcing it if that's the question that's being asked.
Well, there's two schools of thought maybe. There's one where it's like, hey, I want to keep my depth chart protected as long as I possibly can, but I also want to give confidence to these guys. I want the world to know this is the quarterback is one of the leaders, sometimes the leader, depending on the team. So that could be the school of thought too, where I want to shout it off to the rooftops that this is the guy, and we're all 100% behind him and ready to rock and roll.
Yeah. You know, the question I'm always waiting for, you're exactly right. The question I'm waiting for a lot when the media brings up and I don't mean that in a negative way. I don't consider you media. Right? We've spent enough time together.
I think
a lot
of people think I'm an idiot too, so they don't consider me media either.
You are media, but just the back and forth that we have, I'm not waiting for a certain question. I know I can just say whatever I want to say, right?
Yeah.
But you know, in NFL quarterback battles, you hear a lot of experienced media will just say things like, "Hey coach, who started today?
Mm-hmm.
Who took the one reps today?" And we don't really get that question a lot for whatever reason. Number one, you know, we don't have as many media, and so it's probably just I don't get as many questions. But that is a question that unequivocally I would answer with 100% honesty and truth every day. I mean, I'm answering all the questions every day, but it's really hard. I think people think a lot of times you're hiding behind coach speak or you're trying to hide something when you say, no, these guys are battling every day. It's reality. They're battling every day. If you ask them, they would tell you the same thing. But if you ask them specifically, hey, who took the first group of ones reps today? Who got more starting reps today? They'll answer that too. We're not trying to hide that.
Yeah. Well, and I guess the reason I don't ask it as much on, you know, the 7th day of August is because what you just said to open the podcast, you know, some days we're doing this combination. We're throwing these guys out there. And two guys with two somewhat different skill sets too. So it's like, hey, let's see how this combination works a little bit better. And yeah, some people like to take that and blow it up and go, wow, I saw Hank Gibbs out there all day today. That's got to mean. I've done it enough, I guess. And I'm not saying I'm any deep, amazing journalist out there, but I've done it enough to know day 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 could mean one thing. Day 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 could mean another. Oh, and then we're going back to what we saw on day 1, 2, and 3. We see it all over, whether we're talking the NFL or college football. So I hear you say that I got two guys right now, and maybe there's a one and a two, but it's not official just yet. And I really take that as your word. I don't think in the back of your head you're like, okay, it's Castelli for sure.
Right.
I truly believe that, yeah, you are throwing out different combinations to see what works. So maybe one day, if this guy's with the ones, that doesn't necessarily mean a whole lot.
I can unequivocally say, you know, you've heard me say many times that I believe it. And most of this may even be off of air, but I've told you before, I believe, you know, at a school like UNC that I really have to strive to be a partner with media, with anybody that's paying attention to what we do. I believe that I can send messages to my team, our fan base, anybody who cares, if I do a good job of working with and communicating in an honest way with the media. To me, that's all cultural.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've never answered a question about the depth chart and in some way manipulated it to try to get a message out. I'm simply speaking about exactly what we're doing in that moment.
Well, and I think – and let me just say this for those listeners, you know, pull back the curtain a little bit. You guys – and I'm not like throwing any other coaching staffs under the bus or administration, but this year, I mean, we're talking about – I do a show 11 to 2, so my days are pretty choppy, pretty – I'm here a lot or I'm out meeting with clients, whatever. And we were all talking before practice last week about, hey, we're looking at press conference times and things like that, what might be able to work. And that to me is amazing because it's like, all right, if it's outside of that show window, I'm going to be front and center, ready to rock and roll. That's never been asked to me before. And so I don't know if it was just ever top of the mind. You and I doing this weekly podcast might make this stuff a little more top of mind. So that right there shows me, we want to get the word out. We want to get more people that are interested, engaged. You want to get more people excited about your program and asking those questions, Coach. And I think inviting the media and making it more available to everybody is just a huge thing. And I've certainly noticed that more on my side. And so I'm excited about that. This podcast alone has certainly answered a lot of those questions, opened up a lot as far as talking about this football program.
I had never heard or paid attention to the term long form media until you started talking about this podcast, that long form. And, you know, people will ask me all the time, you know, our producer was just in here a moment ago, hey, how's camp going? And it's like, to me, that sounds like, hey, how you doing? And, yep. And okay, sure. Do you really want to know everything going on in my life right now? Do you really want to know each small great. Problem? You know, so it's like, hey, yeah, team's doing great, thanks. And then, you know, when we get this, to me is a really a amazing opportunity to actually go into detail, because I feel like when you're asking the question or when somebody is logging on and going to download an hour long podcast, they're looking for yes. the long answer.
Yep.
They're looking for what's going good and, you know, maybe even a little bit of what we're working on. I don't want to expose any players or coaches. You know, I don't want to air any dirty laundry about guys that are having setbacks or not meeting their potential right now. But, you know, at the same time, I think just an honest look at, you know, what's going mostly well and then some areas that we're trying to improve, I think it's very pertinent to what we're doing.
I think next time, Coach, somebody says, how's camp going? Just say, football 52. Just, you know, tune in. That'll give you the full answer because unless you're just saying, how do you do? If you really want to know, we've got an hour for you every single week. There's a good shot for you.
I'm going to get myself into a little bit of trouble here because I actually said that to my wife, you know, and it didn't come across the right way. You
no.
know, like our home is just like such a sacred place for me. I mean, I have to be on all the time at work. I've got 120 players and 25 more staff people, support staff, coaching staff, et cetera, that just they need me to be on. They need me to be, you know, positive when the task demands that. They need me to correct courses when the task demands that and do it artfully and in a way that motivates them. And it's just, you know, mentally and physically draining. And when I come home sometimes, my wife and I, we've known each other since grade school. You know, we started dating when we were sophomores in high school. And there's just that comfort where when I walk in our house, there's just an immediate kind of relaxation and I drop my guard. And when she says, you know, how's practice going? And then a few follow-up questions. I just want to say, man, can I give you a limit on the number of questions here? Because I really was looking forward to just decompressing and getting some rest. And at this time of year, we're working 80 hours, our staff, 80 hours a week. I mean, I have to be at our first lift at 5:50 a.m. to throw a little bit of scratch to the chickens and a flake of hay to the horses. I got a 4:30 a.m. wake-up call, and we're not done watching film till 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. Mm. I mean, it's a mad dash to get done what we need to get done.
Do you ever find time, and this is a stupid question, but is there ever a 30-minute nap window, Coach? Because I always hear that, too, where the grind is a real thing, where it's late nights, it's extremely early mornings, and we all know your backstory. You are working out with this team. You're not just coming in for a quick jog. You're doing all the reps. You're doing everything. Is there ever, like, a cat nap window or something, Coach? Come on.
I am so jealous. I wouldn't hold it against any one of our staff that could do that. I mean, people on planes, when I see them napping, I'm so jealous. It's just – I'm just not cut.
You're
like
not
that.
A napper.
No, and if I – you know, if I've got something going on, you know, trip to the emergency room or a flood in the middle of the night or something, you know, one of those nights where I don't get any sleep or get to sleep at 4 a.m., 6 a.m., I'm up again. It's just it's just kind of a curse. And sometimes I know that it's a blessing because I'm not popping into our morning weights with sleepy eyes like some of the guys I see really struggling. So I think there are just trade-offs in terms of our natural body clocks, but my natural body clock is not to nap during the day.
Put on some History Channel American Pickers. It does the trick every single time. I love that show, but I fall asleep about 5 minutes in, so I never really get there. Just a tip for down the road if you ever need a coach. I've got plenty of nap suggestions. Let's continue talking about this offense. We hit the quarterback side of it. And that's the thing. There's so many things to pay attention to. There's so many things in areas fans want to know about every single position. But I like this one today. We're going to focus a little bit more on offensive standouts, sure. Guys that are sticking out right now at this point. Yeah. Obviously, quarterback is that big position we're looking at. But what are some of those other spots? I know we've talked a lot about the O-line. We've sure. talked a lot about the running backs and what these wide receivers, we know that they're working hard. Who is kind of stepping or showing out a little bit more to maybe if a random person were to show up, they might go, wow, those four or five guys are really looking good.
Yeah. Let me complete the quarterback room, or, okay. or at yeah, least sure. in terms of the top four guys, because I can say that two big two big, I would say, surprises. The quarterback depth chart's got that 1 and 2 where those guys' game is similar enough that they're doing a lot of the same plays. It diverges a little bit at number 3, where Caden Box has really established himself as a young, promising passer. And and we've had success with that in the past, Coach Walter Scheid and I and a lot of our staff. And so we're not afraid to move the offense that direction. If Caden continues to develop, we feel really good about his ability to develop an elite arm, move the ball through the air, and he's put on 30 pounds of muscle, which just makes him, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, more. And that's he arrived in January. He elected to gray shirt, which is, if anybody's wondering what that is, that's a part-time student. He was a part-time student last fall by his own choice. Then he joined us last January. So he gets a whole spring practice, 8 weeks of winter conditioning, all of summer ball, all of summer preparation. And then he's still a true freshman right now. But to our guys, he's a veteran because he's been around for a long time, right? He's not one of the guys that just showed up a few weeks ago. He's been around since January. So Caden's done a really nice job with that. And then Jonah Chong, a transfer from University of Hawaii, who's a little more cut like Peter, in his ability to just kind of to move the ball all over the place, got some jitterbug in him, the ability to keep, scramble, and with, especially when he can get defenses respecting that and stepping up, he can find seams and get the ball out on the perimeter in a hurry. Just a really good all around athlete.
With going back to Caden Box, to him being a Longmont guy, we know we have a lot of listeners that followed him in the high school side of things too. So we get a lot of people reaching out and asking about him. A lot of people were telling me about hey, I heard that he put on 30 pounds of muscle. I mean, this is crazy. So that's when people are starting to get all right, they're serious about lifting over there. They're serious about building those bodies up over there. And that's what I've heard specifically about what Caden's been up to the last several months.
Yeah, I think a lot of these guys, when I'm recruiting them and maybe when I'm talking on this podcast, like, people think, you know, that I have read about this, you know, weightlifting stuff on Instagram or something, or I've learned that that's how you sell your culture. This is real. Like, what we're doing in our weight room, it is real, unusual, if not unique. Most coaches that I know are completely fascinated with being fresh and quick. And we are 100% willing to sacrifice freshness, quickness, team meeting time, practice time, all in the name of being the biggest, strongest, most physical team we can be.
And I love it. We've talked about that a lot too, where you're listening to the players and they are buying into it. And, you know, they're saying, hey, we're hearing all this stuff, but we didn't know once we actually get there what this looks like. And Coach Hill, he has become, we got to get him on at some point, whether it's my show or this podcast, he's become famous, at least through the KFK airwaves, because whether it's you talking about him, the rest of the coaching staff's talking about him, or players, people have a lot of, their eyes light up a little bit. There's also a little fear there too, because they know, is he going to make me do something right now while we're doing this interview? But you can tell, man, they love what he's bringing to the table.
Oh, he's, his salary is his business, but I can tell you that his job, the way he's allowed to do his job, he's the envy of every college football strength coach out there. If you're not right with Coach Hill, you're not on our depth chart. Mm. I mean, it starts with him. And I don't know if you want to use the term foundation, he is the foundation, or if you want to use the term top. I mean, he's at the top of our coaching staff. He is the gatekeeper. You don't come anywhere near our field without being right with Coach Hill. And I've said that over and over and over to our team. If you haven't connected weight room effort and gains in your lift ability, your overall body weight, your overall body composition, you're not right for this program. You will never achieve the spot on the depth chart that your talent would indicate, because we're always going to kick you down because we know you're not part of our culture. And a lot of our coaches have to be, they got to stand in line with that, because it's a dangerous place to live. But I've decided that, and I got guys around me who have bought into that.
I think both of those, the gatekeeper, the foundation, yeah. I mean, all that stuff makes sense, because what are you building as a team? You're building a foundation. And it's as specific as saying you're starting with your body, with your own person, your own situation. And then that is building the foundation of this football team at its core. All right. So we talked a little bit about quarterbacks, Coach. Who else is sticking out these last what, 7 or 8 days?
Yeah, let me start on the offensive line there with that question. Just some guys that, you know, really, I think, have elevated or exceeded kind of our early hopes. I'll start with the true freshman, Lincoln Faupuli. You know, any true – we're not – our program, we need wins in a bad way, but I don't think any program is destitute to the point where they're hoping a true freshman comes in and actually starts. Lincoln Faupuli is pushing for a starting job right now, and it's very early in camp, and he's got a long way to go and a lot to learn, but he really does some things in a way that we could see him getting in the mix, and love his approach all the way through weight room, meeting room, practice. Jack it's Zabel. We all call him Z-Ball, but he started some games as a true freshman last year at center. Well, that was a 270-pound guy who's got a certain level of strength. Now he's a 308-pound guy with a lot more strength, but wow. More importantly, that strength is putting him in body positions that he wasn't getting into a year ago. He's sustaining blocks at a much higher rate. And then and then Levi Johnson, another young redshirt freshman player. He's the 6'6", 315-pound mold kind of guy that you know, we would like all of our offensive tackles to be. But he's also an engineering student with a 3.9 GPA, and just seems to always do and say the right thing and works his butt off. So those three guys have been, I would say, their progress or where they're at on the depth chart right now is a pleasant surprise to us. Not that we didn't expect great things from them eventually, but I just think they're ahead of schedule, if that's a fair way to say it.
Sure.
Aiden Moe's back from injury, and we really missed him a lot last year. He's been taking most of our left tackle reps, and a lot of what we do starts at that left tackle position. James Betchart is when we got here, he was 260 pounds. Now he's 319 pounds and one of our strongest guys on the team. His commitment is paying off in a big way. Frank Thompson has changed a lot of his. You know, he's been around here a long time, seen a lot of different coaching staffs, had a lot of different things asked of him. He's bringing a presence right now at our guard position. We want a mauler on our team, and he's that in that role of the mauler where we feel like we need some tough yards. We can get behind Frank. And then Micah Nanning was a guy we moved from defensive line last year. And that's always going to be a bit of a struggle, just the body posture that goes from D-line to O-line. And he's really, really done a nice job there of progressing as an offensive lineman. And right now he's taking the majority of our right tackle reps. Isaiah Sierra was injured last year kind of a fire plug for us. Really good student in the classroom, really good student of the game, one of the strongest players on our team. He's definitely in the mix. And so that's kind of some of our top guys right now that I think are really impressing the coaching staff.
Well, I mean, we've talked a lot about the O-line, and it sounds like almost most of these guys are really stepping up in a big way. I was watching Aiden Moe push the sleds around. What is he, 6'8", coach? He's a huge dude. He's a gigantic man. Right. So, I mean, but I'm seeing this. I'm looking. There's a lot of 300-pounders. So you got some meat on that offensive line either way, and it's the good kind of meat, as we're talking about with muscle gain.
Right. Yeah, we're going to look nothing like we did last year. And do looks win games? No. It's just an indication of our guys buying in because we've asked them to do certain things. We've asked them to get to target body weights. We've asked them to get to certain body compositions and strength numbers, and they've worked hard to do that. And they've bought into the fact of, okay, well, coach really isn't giving me a lot of credit here for my talent, and I got to buy into his way first, and then we start talking about talent. And I've just seen that, especially with the offensive line. Love the dynamic right now between Coach Nissen, Nick Nissen, and our offensive line. I think there's a high level of accountability there. There's a lot of intensity in the coaching style, and the guys are buying into that.
I take a lot of little notes throughout these podcasts too, and maybe not themes, but things that I just hear like reoccurring when we're doing these podcasts. And we have talked about the trenches a lot on this show, and I know we'll spend some more time probably talking about the defensive side perhaps next week. But we just keep going back to this offensive line. So, and coach, and you, man, when you have an offensive line that can, you have a lot of different guys that are versatile, have different skill set that they can bring. Whether it's run block, pass block, whatever, you can do a lot of things. You can get extremely creative with that offense, and it makes a quarterback's job easier, a running back's job easier. Everybody gets better. And it sounds like these guys are putting the work in, and there's going to be a lot to pick from when you're assembling that starting lineup.
Absolutely. And important to note, there's only one senior in that group. So we're certainly – we want to keep that in mind as we push them for development. And we're not trying to finish off anybody's career correctly right here. Like, we want these guys to continue to push each other. We want to continue to push them to be a lot better. We want them to understand that their runway is still long.
How about the skill positions, Coach? Any of those guys stepping out? I know we've talked about a handful of guys early on in the podcast. We were spending a lot of time on the wide receivers. We had some great talks about the running back room, too. Talk to us about any of those positions that are maybe jumping out at you.
Sure. Would it appear as attitude if I said I want to do tight ends first? You said running back.
That's the only one I didn't say.
Yeah, the only one you didn't say. But,
well, because I consider that's a hybrid skill position, line, you know, all that stuff. So give me a pass there.
I felt like you left the door open for that. But the reason I want to go to tight ends is because suddenly this position has become, I think, a strength on a level where we look around the league, where we look around the country, and I have such a high level of confidence at how we stack up. I mean, Fisher Clements and Cash Cheeks are 6'7". And excellent hands. They're always open. We try to remind our quarterbacks of that. They're always open because if you put the ball in the right place, it's like feeding a ball to a center inside in basketball. Like, they can be covered up tight, but you can get the ball in there. And that's one of the ways that we feel like we can get some tough yardage this year is with those big tight ends. And then Charlie Garrison. So I think right now we've got three starters at tight end. And I don't know that there's ever a year where I've said that because you normally have like a 1-2 punch, or you have one guy that does this, one guy that does that. These three guys are all, to me, all Big Sky or all American caliber guys. And Charlie is more the 6'5", 255 type of mold, and he's willing to do the dirty work, but at least once a day he runs a route and makes a catch where it's like, man, don't put this guy in a box. Mm. He can do some things too. So really high level of confidence in their approach. Spence Patterson's doing a great job with those guys. You know, when we made a change up there on the offensive line, Spencer, you know, by trade is an O-line coach, and no O-line coach wants to be moved away from the offensive line. But I think really quickly he figured out he just won the lottery. This tight end group is really, really good.
Well, and again, you know, not to single one guy out, but Fisher Clements is the name that keeps coming up too. I know we're trying to get him on the program here pretty soon. Obviously, you know, the priorities change a lot for these guys once they got out of the awesome camping trip that you guys went on a week and a half ago. It shifts. So I know we're going to try to get him on, but that's another big dude right there. What is he, 6'8"? Is he 6'7"? Or 260 pounds? I mean, that's a monster, and if you throw a little speed in there, man, that's like you said, always open. When you have the size and the speed, yeah, you're always open. It doesn't matter how much a guy is draped all over you.
Yeah, he and Cash, you know, when you take a 6'7" guy and they're kind of loping down the field, let's call it, as a defensive back, even a tall defensive back, which is a 6'1", 6'2 guy, you're looking at him going, oh, they're not moving very fast, until you're actually trying to roll with them stride for stride. Like, their strides are a lot longer. And that's what Fisher and Cash both bring, is there's an ability to stretch the field, not just like what we call vertically, right, down the field toward the end zone, and horizontally, right? But these guys stretch it in a new direction where you can throw them essentially the alley-oop even when they're covered, because they're so long, have such long arms, and they've got really good hands. I mean, we're not just putting a tall guy out there and saying, hey, he's always open, give him a shot.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
No, these guys concentrate. They've worked at their craft. They're really talented players. And, I think had we had a little different culture, they might just be some long guys with good hands. But they're strong now too, and they've worked at that. Cash came in as a – you know, either wide receiver or safety, outside linebacker. We weren't quite sure where he would fit. And he was kind of down in the wide receiver room at about 208 pounds. And we said, hey, you can be really good if you get to 248 at tight end.
Wow.
And he's like, okay, let's go. 40 pounds. I mean, it's incredible what a lot of these guys have accomplished.
I'm just hearing more and more of those stories from you, too, where it's like, hey, here's where you could be. This is your potential. You got to get there, though, first, and then we're going to be chiseling out the position in you too. We got to get you to that number, putting on that muscle, eating the right stuff. And then we're going to make a whatever player out of you, a tight end out of you. And I absolutely love those stories because that right there shows you the dedication your players have.
The first episode we did, I was so nervous because I was like, and I even said it on the show, who's going to want to listen to an 0-11 football coach, right? But I think a lot of the reason that the guys are buying into these kind of – like that's an audacious goal when we tell a guy, hey, we're going to move you from wide receiver to tight end and we need you to gain 40 pounds. We're giving them an audacious task, and when they buy into that, that's an audacious goal. But I really believe that the lack of success that we've had on the field has been the fertilizer for guys accepting that and saying, okay, yeah, we got to do something different. We don't want to live through that again. Coaches coached Big Sky Championships. I was telling our players the other day, we got 9 Big Sky Championship rings amongst our coaching staff. Once you taste that, nothing else works. Not playoffs, not second place, not playing for the championship late. The only acceptable outcome for every season for you once you have tasted that is a conference championship. So I want to be clear. The things that we're asking of you is that path, is that map. And I think that's why a lot of players are buying in and making progress, I think, at a different rate than other programs are making. We are narrowing the gap. We maybe have exceeded the gap. We'll find out. We'll let Saturdays – I'm not going to talk about it. We'll let Saturdays be the litmus test for whether we've done that.
August 31st, Incarnate Word coming up,
a very
up,
good
coach.
Team, right? It's not, yep. That's not a game where we could go down there, get a victory on the road against the team favored to win the Southland Conference, go to the playoffs. That's not a game where we go down there and come out victorious and somebody says, well, they're not a very good team. Like, this is one of the top teams in the country.
Sure.
What a great way to start the season for us on the road with an opportunity to show that we can win on the road.
All right, keeping on with the offensive standouts. Now we look at the other skill positions, wide receiver and running back. Where do you want to go there, Coach?
Sure. Let's go to wide receiver because, you know, no conversation should be started without, like, Braden Monroe about our offense. And it's because of what he brings on and off the field. A 4.0 student, a true freshman starter, the strongest, fastest wide receiver we have. We've tested it. We tested it in the offseason. I thought it was really an eye-opener for coaching staff and players to know where they're at. And it's not always the strongest or fastest player that's the best player, right? But it was just a data point of information. And I thought that it allowed Braden to kind of excel. I think when he came on as a freshman last year, it took a while for our coaches to even figure out what his abilities were, right? Because he's learning the playbook while other guys are months ahead that coming out of spring ball. But I think, you know, as coaches, we saw it before the players did. And so the immediate reaction from a lot of the players is going to be, well, what's the deal? They're kind of thrusting this guy in. What is it? Because he's a legacy kid. Like, you know, Braden's dad played here at UNC and was a good player. I don't even know if a lot of our players are aware of that. Or is he a coach's favorite? You know, what's going on? And I think he just kind of ignored the noise, put his head down, and established himself as a real leader in that room. Not the only leader, but in terms of a guy who's doing things right on and off the field, and it shows up in practice every day, he's just got so much respect from his teammates. I think he elevates the whole group. So love what Braden's doing. We're lining him up all over the place. I mean, you'll see him lined up in the backfield. You'll see him lined up outside, inside, because he can do so many different things. I want to give just some other guys like shout outs just for kind of showing up here and making our team better. But River Stout joined us in the spring. A Colorado kid that played JC ball out in California and comes back for us. He's really brought a toughness. He attacks the football and brings a toughness to our level of play out there at receiver. Ryder McGillivray transferred from Utah State. I'm rolling through all these transfers here because I almost feel apologetic because I've really poo-pooed the idea of building our team with transfers. But we've just kind of – I don't want to say we've not recruited them, but we're not scouring the portal for anything other than Colorado kids that are looking to come back home and anyone who reaches out to us. And I just think that's the right dynamic for us. Ryder McGillivray has made us a better team, worked really hard. He'd been at Utah State where they don't – like lifting's not really a part of their process. They do maintenance lifts during the season. And so like he spent the first 3 weeks with us just like sore, like physically ill because of all the lifting that we do. And then it just like switched for him. He saw the progress and he loves it. And then another guy, Jay Berry, another Colorado kid who was out at FIU, Florida International. And my first meeting with Jay Berry, I don't know if I've talked about this with you or on air, but yeah, my first meeting with him, I don't want to embarrass him. I really feel like it's an embarrassment to me because I met with him on his recruiting visit, and I was like, I said to him, man, you're not right for this place. Like you're not answering things in the way that I would want you to answer them. I don't think this is the right place for you. And to his credit, he didn't give up. You know, he's like, hey, coach, can I talk to you again? Can you and I meet one on one? And then said, hey, I'm trying to improve the way I come across. And so we talked about that, started to get to know each other, and all that's fine. And we had, you know, because we had recruited him and because we had made commitments in the recruiting process, I told him, hey, look, we're not backing out on you here. We've made commitments. We're going to follow through on those. And that's what I believe in as a coach. He has exceeded every hope that I would have for him.
Wow.
I mean,
that's
came
a great
in
story.
And just like early on in the weight room, it was like, hey, man, have you ever lifted? Like you don't seem into it. You seem lost. You're not with the flow. And then all of a sudden one day it just flipped and he passed the 316. And then, but once he got to practice here in fall camp, just a different guy. And I went up to him about the third day of camp. I said, hey, I want to let you know, just in case I haven't kind of showed you with my actions and my excitement and my praise of you, I just want to say clearly, I didn't get the right impression of you in my first meeting. I have some fault in that. You may have too. I don't know. Like you can take whatever you want on yourself, but I made a mistake. We almost missed out on you, and I'm glad you're here because you're making us better.
Man, I love that story too. First impressions sometimes can be great. They can be different. You're not connecting right off the bat, but then something's hitting, and then he's out to prove that he belongs, and he's taking in what you guys are saying. Man, that's a combination right there.
Yeah, and these kids, they are kids still. They're men physically, and in a lot of ways they're men, but it's not like I can really go up to them and say, what about you? Did you misinterpret our first conversation? You know what I mean? They're not going to articulate
that.
It's just like,
I don't know.
It, like that makes a lot of guys really uncomfortable, as it did me when I was that age. So, and I'm the coach, right? So they're just going to say, no, coach, all good. You know, like,
right.
You know, that's all they want. They just want to kind of get away from me at that point and keep performing. And I respect that. But, you know, be really interesting if someday we can talk about that moment, or, you know, maybe if he's not talking to me, you know, be interested. His dad was involved in the recruiting process and he's got a football family. And so maybe somewhere down the road we can kind of talk and say, hey, how do I make sure that doesn't happen again on a recruiting visit?
Sure.
One of the best players I ever coached, James Cowser, was the career leader in FCS tackles for loss at Southern Utah, and that's probably the only thing I could liken it to in terms of failing the recruiting process, because when he came and met with me, I told him the same thing: you should go to Weber State. You're not right for us. I'm not hearing the things. And he and his mom drove back from Cedar City to Salt Lake, or near Salt Lake, where they're from. And I got a call about 2 hours later from his mom. And she said, hey, I was sitting in that meeting and you guys just didn't communicate correctly. I'm putting it on you both. He's on speaker right now. And you guys need to redo this.
I love that. Like, how many times in the adult world too, and outside the football world, where we've had meetings and you shake somebody's hand, you're like, I don't like that handshake. Wow, I don't like the way that conversation went down. Can we just restart? Can we do a different one? Because we both weren't in sync. Sometimes you need a recharge. So that's awesome. I love to hear that.
I gave out a survey last year to the players. Just, hey, give us some feedback. Equipment room, training room, coaches, et cetera. One of them was feedback on the head coach. And one of the guys said, are you like the most intense guy in the world? Is this an act or is it the real you? And it really made me reflect, you know, because I think in part it is an act, or at least an aspiration that I have to bring intensity to these guys in my interactions with them daily, especially when I'm speaking to all 100 of them or 120 of them. I want to bring intensity to those moments, but I also want them to know that I'm real and authentic. And, you know, that's not the way that I would talk to them on a one-on-one basis, which I don't at this point in the season. I haven't had a chance to visit with all these guys one-on-one. So that's really I know that I can be misunderstood in those moments. And I want to bring a lot of intensity to that first meeting that we have. I want to ask tough questions. I want to see how guys respond. And, you know, it needs to be a lesson to me. Jay Berry is the recent case, but also maybe the one of the best players that I ever coached, the fact that I got the wrong impression of him. I was wrong. Clearly, I was wrong. Now, did both of those guys become better players in part because I was honest with them about my impression? I don't know. I don't want to give that too much credit because that could just make me into a butthole all the time, and I don't want to be a butthole. Most of the time, those visits go really well. But in those two cases, and so far with Jay Berry's career, really happy with where he's at.
Yeah, it just goes to show you, whether it's college football or in the workforce, whatever, sometimes you get an impression of a person, and they might – I mean, you met Tanner before, that guy. Yeah. And now look at him. He's rocking and rolling here. He'll probably listen to this and kill me for this one later. But, Coach, I just want to – one note on Braden Monroe, too. You talk about the 316s, the workouts. I remember when we first started doing this podcast, I think he was one of the first names we kind of went into because we were talking about that wide receiver room, just how impressed you were about his leadership there when it comes to the workouts. So to hear his name just be a constant – 26 weeks later, I mean, it's not a big shocker to me because I know that was a big name for you guys. And it wasn't just the skill set. It was the work ethic and everything that went into it.
Yep. He's just a strong person, strong physically, strong mentally, unflappable, really. Nobody's perfect. He's not perfect every day. There's drops, there's mistakes, but just the strength of his daily approach in everything he does is really a good example for our whole team, coaching staffs too. I mean, the great players inspire coaches, and I think he's at that level already in his young career where it's like we want to work hard for that guy because everything we ask of him is unquestioned. You know, he's going to go full speed in the direction we point, and then wait till the meeting to say, hey, coach, did you point in the right direction? You know, that's him. Where other guys. They might, their first inclination is, do I trust this coach yet? You know, is he saying the right thing? Is he coaching this right? Coaches make mistakes too. I mean, I admit that to the players all the time, but we really need guys who say, okay, first I'm going to do it. And then later I'm going to talk about it at an appropriate time. And that's just a little analogy for the way I see Braden Monroe's approach. And he's not the only one.
No. And I was just going to say, what a treat for me this is, because you hear names that, you know, most of the time when I'm talking college football when did we start this, in January or whatever, I'm not thinking of the roster yet. I mean, although a depth chart would be good in January, Coach. You know how I love those. I'm not thinking of those players yet. You're thinking of maybe one position, the quarterback, or maybe one standout on defense. But you've brought up these different names and these different stories about riding horses with Afari, meeting with a wide receiver that you weren't sure it was clicking right off the bat, or guys that just impressed you from the get-go. These stories, man, it brings it all full circle. And now as we're really starting to talk about the roster and the actual X's and O's, man, it makes some interesting connection points too. So this is really fun.
I'm glad. Getting back to those receivers, Kobe Kosick is, I would say, kind of like I was talking about with the offensive line. You know, we have high hopes for every guy on the team, but he's just exceeded the timeline. He's exceeded the expectations. He's making tough catches. He's getting open. Another junior college transfer for us. So that receiver room, I think, really needed it. We've got, you know, we got veteran guys too. Oliver Ortiz has stepped up his game. He's showing up last year as a true freshman. He wasn't showing up as consistently. He's showing up more often now. He's a real guy, a threat to get in the mix. And then a true freshman, Keenan Campbell, has got a lot of abilities. And, you know, it is very difficult to just come in as a true freshman and have the type of fitness, strength, mental fitness to really get through training camp and compete for a spot. But Keenan Campbell is in the mix. And that one for us is a real surprise because we took him as a, hey, Keenan, you're an amazing athlete. You got a lot of development. You got a long way out in front of you. I have no idea what position you're going to play. Anything from any position on defense. He literally we could probably make him into any position on defense, from corner to defensive tackle. He's just got that kind of like frame, athleticism. You know, he's got the speed to play in the defensive backfield. He's got the size to put on a lot of weight. And we see the same thing on offense. But right now at receiver, he's given us a little bit of something that we don't have. And we're trying to see how far we can take that.
A competitive wide receiver room. It sounds like a hardworking group of guys that are ready to compete. And,
hungry.
And that's what you want.
Hungry, because there's not a lot of returning production there. You know, from a returning production standpoint, you know, really, you know, Jordan Riles played a role at times last year. It was a little bit more involved at the early in the season than later in the season. And so he's one of the guys that, you know, has that experience. It's really just him and Braden, and all these other names we're talking about are, you know, they're new guys, they're transfers in, they're young guys that are trying to find their way on the depth chart. And we really need that, because two receivers don't make a team. And Braden and Jordan, they've got their own progress that they're trying to make. I'm really glad to see guys step up, because the transfer portal and freshmen, it's just, I don't think to be a good program, I don't think you can count on them. I see it as bonus, and we got a lot of bonuses clicking right now.
Coach, I know we've just got a couple of minutes left. Let's talk about the running back room, too. If we have some time, we'll get into those guys. We've talked a lot. You know, obviously, David Afari's story, your connection with him, relationship with him. And we brought up the recent transfer out of Colorado State, Van Shield, too. So those are two big names. But I know that there's a lot. You know, we talk about Meese, too. There's a lot of running backs in this room. And this is the thing, I think. I've heard it from a lot of listeners of the show where it's like, sounds like that running back room is going to be really deep.
I hope it's deep. I know it's flat. I'm going to bring some honesty here.
Okay.
It's very flat. I've got no idea who's going to step out of this flat running back room, and I say that with a lot of confidence in each one of them. And I'll just rip down through the depth chart really quick. But we've had one day of full contact football, and that's the only day that matters at running back in terms of depth chart movement. You can make a lot of movement as an offensive lineman, as a receiver, as a tight end, as a quarterback. On days where we're in shells, you know, the contact part of the game is important there. But at running back, it's got to be, do you go to the ground or do you not go to the ground? Do you refuse to be tackled or are you easy to tackle? And we've got enough good talent in that room that as a coaching staff, we're not looking for, you know, like the best pass blocker first or the best catcher first or the guy who sees it the best or the guy who can find the hole and get what it's blocked for. I want to be really clear. We are looking for the guy who refuses to be tackled. And the guy who does that best, we will teach him all the rest of the stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'm still waiting for that hero. That running back room needs to have that guy. In the spring, that was Caden Meese. And we talked about it, and we rewarded him a scholarship. And like I said, we've only had one day of fall camp, so it all starts over every single day with the running backs. And we need more than one. David Afari was our most productive back overall throughout the course of last year. He's certainly right there in that mix. Van Shield is new and has been bringing it in practice and has earned the respect of his teammates quickly. But again, amongst those three guys, I can't tell you right now who's refusing to be tackled. There's not enough sample size.
Okay,
right?
Sure.
And so there's a big difference between making a guy miss. This is where a lot of running backs get it wrong. And they need to understand that, especially here. Making a guy miss is not the same as breaking a tackle. And so I have our running backs coach really make sure he's pointing that out. A juke is not what we're looking for. Like, that's great. That's part of your game, right? But we're looking for guys who break tackles. That's what drives championship football teams, is a guy. You got to have a running back that breaks tackles. Jaquez Robertson made a lot of people miss last year. He's in the mix. Jordan Hornbeek was young last year. He appeared in a couple of games, ran hard. He's in the mix. Darius Stewart, I'm only bringing him up a little bit later in this group because he's been injured a lot of the offseason. He's back 100% healthy right now. He's probably one of our best vocal leaders on the team. When things were going wrong last year, he wasn't afraid to speak up and call it like he saw it. And I've got great respect for him, the way he approaches the game. All of these guys have all-conference ability. It's just a mindset, okay, who is the tackle breaker? And maybe we've already got one, maybe we've already got three, and it's coaches, we haven't identified it yet because the sample size is too small in terms of the amount that we've gone live. We're going to make sure and get enough live reps in to figure that out. Cam Taylor, really dynamic young player. Wouldn't be surprised to see him play some significant time this year. Jaden Thomas, the transfer from New Mexico State, another local kid. A lot of these transfers, you see the theme, they're local guys. And Jaden's brought a lot of energy, incredibly quick. Most, you know, in terms of guys that are people that are paying attention, Jaquez made a lot of people miss last year. Jaden has that same kind of shifty ability So it brings us another example of that. And then Mathias Price, he and Keenan Campbell, I was talking about the young freshman receiver. Those two guys are freaks, just physically, and they expect to play. And I'm not putting anything past either one of those guys. Mathias Price, if you walk out on our field and say, okay, there's the running backs, which one's the freshman? He's the last guy that you would ever think is the freshman in that group. Physically developed, strong, mature, love his approach. It's early in camp. There's a lot to play out at that position, but excited about a lot of different guys.
I love to hear you say that, too, just evaluating the running back room like this, because I think a lot of fans just think, okay, once practice starts, you know, that's the start of figuring out who's going to be the guy. But you're flat out saying, hey, there's only so much we can tell by a running back. And you know, if they're making guys miss, okay, great, we're not tackling. But I want to see dudes run over a guy. I want to see guys break that tackle. And surprise, surprise, that goes along with the theme of being the strongest football player out there. It goes right along with what you're talking about, what you've been talking about all offseason.
I don't think it's getting through yet to that running back room. I think there's so much confidence there, personal confidence that guys have. I think a lot of guys are in a learning phase. They're still looking at the playbook. They're kind of wondering where they're at on the depth chart. They're trying to see things well. They're trying to execute. And the next level, I haven't seen it yet. I'm just being honest. I haven't seen it yet. I'm waiting. Who will be the hero? Who will break tackles? We need a superhero to be a super football team. And we need a guy that breaks tackles. I'm looking for the guy who, when a block is missed up front, he doesn't make the defender miss necessarily, because that's a, you know, defenders, when defenders miss, there's a problem with their tackling technique, their leverage, etc. I'm looking for a guy who goes through the tackler, breaks a good solid tackle, and to be fair to the running backs, we just haven't had enough opportunities to do that yet. But you know, I would have loved to have come out of the first day and say, here's the guy that did that in the first day. And I'm still waiting.
All right, let's make that a message to the running back room. We need a hero. I'm about ready to play that song right now. Let's make this a promo, coach. You're getting, I'm a little banged up, but I'm ready to try to break a tackle. It might be against our producer, Micah, but I'm ready to go at some point. I'm going to break a tackle. You're getting me fired up.
We can set it up. I got a whistle in the truck.
Hey, I know we want to get into the mental and physical manifestations of humility.
Yeah.
Do we have time to get into
sure,
that?
Yeah.
I also have a whistle thing I want to bring up with you
okay.
as well.
Very good.
Quickly on the whistle thing, I just thought this was funny. I'm out at practice. Eddie Gonzalez, I just love Eddie, comes up to me. He's got the biggest smile. He's so fired up, ready to go. Speaking extremely highly of you. He said you were giving him whistle technique of how to blow the whistle, that he wasn't hitting the whistle notes the right way. He wasn't really getting after it in that way. So he's got homework.
Yeah, well, first I had to get him the right equipment. There's no serious football coach or official that's not using a Fox 40. So I got him a Fox 40 whistle.
Fox 40 whistle, okay.
Yeah, and that helped him. But he was also blowing it with just his lips.
Yeah.
You know, which is like when a kid steals your whistle, that's what they do. And so we had to get him, you know, clench that whistle with your teeth, and then you're going to use your lips to perfect the seal. And now you need to bring as much force as you can, because conviction behind that whistle is what people react to. You get out there blowing it soft, you're going to get a soft reaction. And look, we got two separate fields going on. And when Eddie blows that whistle, it needs to be like heard on both fields, right? Because he blows the transition whistle, he's blowing the sack whistle, he's blowing the end of play whistle. And this is new for him this year. I wanted to get more involved with, you know, not necessarily running the structure of practice from a logistical standpoint. That's more of a director of football operations type role. He's doing a great job at it. He's getting better every single day. And, I was sharing with him that I grew up playing soccer. And in soccer, you don't coach, and at least where I grew up, that in that club, you don't coach or officiate without getting a license. And part of that licensing process, lesson number one, is how to blow a whistle. And so I just had to, you know, go back to that, remember it, and show them how to blow, including the staccato whistle, which is the one that really stands out.
I absolutely love it. That was what stood out to me. One of the things, because Eddie was fired up, and he's like, yeah, I'm learning how to whistle.
Yeah.
And this is great. And you're running around doing the whistle. And Eddie, I mean, he's just like, man, you can feel it. You can just feel it. So I'm smiling ear to ear, ready to go. It's so cool to see it. Coach, while we have you too, one of the notes that you sent me last night, the mental and physical manifestations of humility. There we go. I got it out right.
Sure.
Talk to us about, you know, you sent me the line. Let's elaborate on that.
Yeah. What I've tried to do each week is kind of take a look at, I mean, that was kind of the impetus of this podcast effort for us, right? Was, okay, what are we working on this week? And obviously we're working on camp. And we've said for many months now, hey, when camp and the season gets here, we'll talk more about depth chart. We'll talk more about players. And here we are doing that. But I also want to keep that. This has been important to me to take a look at where we're at each week, what we're preaching culturally, what we're working on, what kind of messages I'm sending to the players. And this is something we've really been working on is our pyramid of greatness. And the top of that pyramid is straight stolen from – and even the idea of a pyramid is stolen from John Wooden and his pyramid of competitive greatness. And it's, you know, right below competitive greatness, which is a result, it's an end result, is confidence and poise. And so I've been spending time with the guys on all the things that you have to achieve and strive for to build confidence and poise in a competitive moment. And so the thing we've been talking about this week is that confidence is really often confused with being the opposite of humility. And to me, it's humility. You think about all the things like in my life that I'm truly confident about, things that matter, not easy things, but like hard things that I'm confident about, it's because of the failures that I've had. It's because of the setbacks that I've had. It's because I've learned and applied lessons and feel more prepared for that next situation. That's, I believe, where true confidence comes into play. And that's if there's one silver lining to going 0-11 and not coming through on some, you know, some of those late games last year where we had every opportunity to win. It's like that 0-11 stings, and there's a realization of if you were part of that, or even if you're just part of that program, that's a little piece of legacy. That's some humility that's kind of built in for us that not every team has. So I think that we have an excellent opportunity to learn from that, to learn during the season, to learn every day, and bring that and gain that confidence, true confidence, through the realization that bad things have happened. And are we better now? Are we better prepared now because of that? And then poise, on the other hand, I think it's also – to me, poise is more like a physical manifestation of humility. If confidence is realizing that things have gone wrong in the past and you've learned from them and have gotten better, I think poise is the realization that in this moment – things can go bad. During this game, things can go bad, and not to overreact, not to react in a way that takes you out of that confident mindset. And so we have really been working on those. To me, what those physical – it's almost reverse. If you think about as you really craft your body in football and learn from your mistakes and fail along the way in the past to get physically dominated or whatever – coming back from that is where that mental confidence comes into play. And to me, poise is, you know, as you build yourself mentally, you're ready for that physical challenge, you know, and in that moment, because you're smarter, you're ready for that moment. And so I just think that those two things just really work together. But, you know, oftentimes when I'm speaking to the players, I'll start with a message and then I'll end with a simpler one. And the simple one I want to say right now is confidence and poise is humility. Don't forget that. Mm. And so we're going to have breakthroughs this year. We're going to have victories. And we got to start over the very next day and realize that, hey, we haven't arrived. We never have. The more we win, the harder teams are going to play against us. And we just have to keep starting over with that humility.
It's amazing, especially you, Coach, the connections we can make to life and football and just a mentality, too. That's one of the other joys of doing this podcast with you is – you know, we'll talk a lot of football, but you're always throwing some kind of philosophy at us too, and it's one of my favorite things. I look forward to it each and every week.
I think our players deserve that. They deserve to know that the lessons in football transcend the football field and can change the type of husband, father, employee, business owner, leader, civic leader in their community that they are someday. I've seen it. I've lived it. I've experienced it, and I think it's incumbent upon us as coaches to do that. It's my main – although I love what the transfer portal does for athletes, it's one of my main concerns with where football is going. College football exists because of the relationship between educating young people, and to me, football's always been – I've seen it as co-curricular, as an opportunity to educate in a different setting than a classroom. for me personally, I learned more things that I could point to on the football field than I learned in any other class, if you want to put it in,
sure.
in that perspective.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think a lot of athletes feel that way. And so it's really, to me, it's a threat that that players are bouncing around so much, because I wonder if, you know, each coach has a different way of saying things. And I can remember being in my junior and senior years and hearing something really for the maybe the 100th time, but it's the first time it made sense, because my coaches had been saying it for years. And I thought, why didn't I pick up on that sooner, the validity of that, the truth in that? And I hope that really we're able to continue to do that as a profession, is make these guys more prepared for life after football.
Whether you're talking about gelling physically or just getting a message from you or a staff or a player that's giving you a message, you're learning about yourself too. You've talked about that. That takes time. And with the transfer portal, unfortunately, you don't get that if you're just jumping around, going to different teams. And I get it. Different situations dictate certain actions, sure. But in order to really build that team and for a player to really grasp what they're trying to be about, jumping around a lot could be difficult. So you can see certainly the pitfalls when it comes to the transfer portal. Coach, this has been a good one today. We had a little snag. We're just pulling back the curtain. We had a snag today on the production side, but we handle it like pros. I'm learning from you as we go with this thing.
Yeah, the first time we had that, I think we talked about it.
You
first
did great.
Time the computer kind of shut off, I had to like jump back
complete
in
a sentence.
When we got it restarted in mid-sentence.
Yep, yep.
And then you had to do that today. So if we can go back and find those two moments, it'd be
See
cool to get like an online vote. Yeah, who did it better, the rookie or the pro?
I think you actually did it better. I think I just repeated myself, but it's always fun. You never know what's going to happen. These podcasts are one of the most awesome forms of production that I've certainly done. And now that we're getting closer to the season, connecting dots and going back on conversations we've had throughout the offseason, it's really fun. And now that we're starting to get a roster, well, not that we didn't have the roster put together, but where these guys are going to fit ultimately on this roster, it's pretty fun, Coach. So I'll plan to be out. Won't be out of practice this week, but I'll plan to be out there next week. Can't wait. I'll see if I can snag some more pictures and get some more comments. People questioning my whatever I post. I'll just make it a point to say this guy's not starting, and then see what happens.
Yeah.
We'll be careful with it.
Hey, drive interest however you can. If they're talking about you, you're ahead of the game.
I love it. Coach, always appreciate you, my friend, and we'll look to catch up with you next week for episode number 28. We're approaching the 30s, so here we go.
Exciting. Thank you, Brady.
All right, Coach. Thanks again.